Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo here. And tonight we're going to have our interview is with Gail Corey Townsend, who is a Palestinian activist and a journalist for Indian Country Times, as well as a founder of a blog, a news blog.
CornerReport.com.
Yes, and very good blog. And if you want to get any information on the Palestinian issue from the viewpoint of the Palestinians, it's a very excellent place to go.
And also she keeps up with the indigenous peoples.
With indigenous peoples and other things. But some national news as well as some Connecticut news. But she's an excellent, not only is she a friend of ours, but she's a very...
she's an excellent reporter
and writer.
She has a sharp mind and has a great touch with the pen.
But she's also just... extremely involved with this. She is a Palestinian, and she has
traveled there many times.
Gone there many times and reported on a number of stories there that didn't make the press in this country. And she broke some national stories that were quite important. And we're going to read some interesting news to you. And about halfway, it's about a 30-minute interview with Gail, and we'll be going to that right afterwards. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy the show. And
there was one article that I want to read that I didn't get a chance to read on our FM show last night that I think is important. It's about the media, and there are, if you'll move your arm, I'll be able to find it. The media and their approach to how they speak about the problem between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and how the opinion of the American public mostly is shaped by the way they do their news reporting. Okay, it's actually from Zogby. How Israel's propaganda machine works. And we do this ourselves as Americans. We have our own propaganda machine. And it's a way of framing things. Because it recognizes the importance of the propaganda war, Israel fights on this battle as vigorously and disproportionately as it engages on the battlefield. As in past Middle East conflicts, both the media storyline and political commentary here in the U.S. has closely followed Israel's talking points on the war. This has been an essential component in Israel's early success in its ability to prolong fighting without U.S. pushback. Because it recognizes the importance of the propaganda war, Israel fights on this front as vigorously and disproportionately as it engages on the battlefield, and here is how it's done. Number one, define the terms of the debate and you win the debate. Early on, the Israelis work to define the context, the starting point, and the storyline that will shape understanding of the war. In this instance, for example, they succeed by constant repetition in establishing the notion that the starting point of the conflict was December 19th. The end of the six-month ceasefire, which Israel described as unilaterally ended by Hamas. In doing so, they ignore, of course, their own early November violations and their failure to honor the commitment in the ceasefire to open Gaza's borders. They also ignored their having reduced Gaza into dependency, a process which began long before and continued after their withdrawal in 2005. Because they know that most Americans do not closely follow the conflict and are inclined to believe, as the line goes, whatever they hear over and over again, this tactic of preemptive definition and repetition succeeds. Now, we did that on the American media in order to justify and frame the understanding of the American public before George Bush went into the war in Iraq. He kept saying how Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And he continued saying that for years, even when he was proved wrong.
Yeah, even after.
Constant repetition and framing.
This week he finally said, my biggest disappointment is there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. I got false intelligence.
Yeah, right.
Bull crap.
This is a process that governments use in manipulating the media. Number two, recognizing that stereotypes work. For generations, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been defined with positive cultural images of Israel and negative stereotypes of Palestinians. Israel's propagandists have an advantage here that is easy to exploit because the story has long been seen as an Israeli humanity confronting the Palestinian problem. Media coverage of any conflict begins with how, in quotes, the problem is affecting the Israeli people. Number three, anticipate and count on your opponent's blunders. Hamas's stupidity played into Israel's strategy. Israel could count on the fact that Hamas would launch rockets and issue the kinds of threats that Israel could then parlay into sympathy in the West. Number four, be everywhere and say the same thing, and make sure your opponents remain as invisible as possible. Israel begins each war with a host of English-speaking post-spokespersons, many born in the West, available at any time for every media outlet. It's no accident, for example, that Israel has an Arab consul general in Atlanta. That's where CNN is. Number five, give no ground. The political apparatus in Washington is also pressed into service, ensuring that the White House and congressional leadership will toe the line. Number six, deny, deny, deny. When events and reality break through, contradicting the Israeli established narrative, creating stories that run counter to the imposed storyline, the propaganda machine works overtime to deny, deny, deny. The last refuge, when all else fails, points to a few examples of outrageous anti-Semitism, generalize them, suggesting that that is what motivates critics. It stings and may be overused, but it can silence or put critics on the defensive. And I think he's right. This is by Dr. Jang Zogby. He is president of the Arab American Institute. And I think he has a point there, and our government used the same formula quite nicely in the lead-up to the war in Iraq and the continuation of that war.
Okay.
All right. I wanted people to hear that.
No, I'm glad you did. I wanted to read this article because Lila read it last night on our FM program, but I think it's very important to hear this. The long and largely untold history of Jewish opposition to Zionism by Alan C. Braunfeld. And this is from WRMEA.org, which is a Jewish, I believe, publication. And it says, while many in Israel and in Jewish communities here and in other countries now promote the idea that Zionism and Judaism are, in effect, the same, and that opposition to Zionism constitutes anti-Semitism, the historical, largely untold fact is that for most of the history, or most of its history, Zionism has been a decidedly minority movement among Jews throughout the world. Since its inception as a political movement in 1897, both Reform and Orthodox Jews have rejected Zionism's basic premise of creating a Jewish state in Palestine and having Jews either emigrate to it or, at the very least, view it as central to their Jewish identity. An overwhelming majority of Orthodox Jews unwillingly to accept the restoration of a Jewish state in Palestine by means other than divine intervention, considered Zionism a false messianic movement. Most Jewish liberals and socialists, having accepted the ideals of the Enlightenment with its emphasis in optimism, reason, and progress, rejected Zionism as a reactionary philosophy. Accumulated Jews in acculturated Jews in Western and Central Europe who regarded themselves simply as members of the religious community rejected the notion that their nationality was not English, French, German, but Jewish. Reform Judaism's position was quite contrary to that promulgated by Zionism. The most articulate spokesman for the German Reform movement, the distinguished rabbi scholar Abraham Geiger, argued that Judaism developed through an evolutionary process that had begun with God's revelation to the Hebrew prophets. That revelation was progressive, with new truth becoming available to every generation. According to Geiger, the underlying and unchangeable essence of Judaism was its morality, and the core of Judaism was ethical monotheism. He considered the Jewish people a religious community, destined to carry on the mission to serve as a light to the nations, to bear witness to God and his moral law. The dispersion of the Jews was not a punishment for their sins, in Geiger's view, but a part of God's plan whereby they were to disseminate the universal message of ethical monotheism throughout the world. Indeed, in a Reformed prayer book he edited in 1854, Geiger deleted all prayers about return to Zion. American Reformed Judaism, in the 1885 Pittsburgh platform, rejected Jewish nationalism. Its fifth paragraph declared, "We consider ourselves no longer a nation, but a religious community." In March 4, 1919, Julius Kahn, a Jewish congressman from San Francisco, delivered to President Woodrow Wilson a statement endorsed by 299 prominent Jewish Americans denouncing Zionists for attempting to segregate Jews and reverse the historic trend toward emancipation. It objected to the creation of a distinctly Jewish state in Palestine because such a political entity would be contrary to the principles of democracy. On April 20, 1922, Rabbi David Philipson testified before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, rejected the characterization of Palestine as the national home of the Jewish people. He insisted that no land can be spoken of as the national home of the Jewish people, as Jews are nationals of many lands. An important new book, A Threat from Within, A Century of Jewish Opposition to Zionism, available from the AET Book Club by Professor Yaakov M. Rabkin, Professor of History at the University of Montreal, sheds significant light on Jewish religious opposition to Zionism. After completing his university education, Dr. Rabkin studied Judaism with rabbis in Montreal, Paris, and Jerusalem. He brings a lifetime of study and experience to this subject. Noting that the rejection of Zionism is often interpreted as an act of treachery toward the Jewish people, Rabkin explains that Zionism was an invention of intellectuals and assimilated Jews who turned their back on the rabbis and aspired to modernity, seeking desperately for a remedy for their existential anxiety. Zionism gained support in areas where social and political conditions were unfavorable to Jews, particularly within the Russian Empire. Indeed, Rabkin argues, Zionism has far more in common with the emerging nationalisms which swept Europe in the late 19th and early 20th centuries than with anything to be found in Jewish tradition. Many today forget the fact that, as Rabkin writes, Zionism constitutes the most radical revolution in Jewish history. Opposition to this nationalist conceptualization of the Jew and the Jewish history was as intense as it was immediate. Even those rabbis who at first encouraged settlement in Palestine in the closing decades of the 19th century felt obliged to turn against Zionism. What made the Jews unique, they declared, was neither the territory of Eretz Israel nor the Hebrew language, but the Torah and the practice of mitzvahs. The pious Jews of Palestine, the only kind before Zionist settlement, enjoyed a certain degree of autonomy granted by the Sultan. They had never contemplated national status, a concept as foreign to the Palestinian Jews as it was to the Ottoman authorities in Istanbul. In the early 20th century, the reaction to Zionism among both Orthodox and Reformed Jews was overwhelming. The French rabbi was unanimous. Rabbis were unanimous. Zionism was narrow-minded and reactionary. They refused to recognize Jews as a separate political nation. We, the French Israelites, have a fatherland, and we intend to keep it. Israel, the state rather than God, has become the object of worship for many Jews. At the present time, Rapkin notes, indeed, Zionism not only has changed Jewish life, but has shifted the meaning of the word Israel. According to Rabbi Jacob Neusner, an American academic and one of the most prolific interpreters of Judaism, the word Israel today generally refers to the overseas political nation, the State of Israel. When people say, I am going to Israel, they mean a trip to Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. But the prayers that Judaism teaches all use the word Israel to mean the holy community. In his book, Transformation, Rabbi Israel Dom writes, it manifestly is absurd to believe that we have been waiting for 2,000 years in so much anguish and with such high hopes and with so many heartfelt prayers merely in order to finish up by playing the same role in the world as Albania or Honduras. Is it not the height of futility to believe that all the streams of blood and tears to which we ourselves can bear witness in our own time, apart from the testimony of our ancestors, should have been fated to the acquisition of this kind of nationhood, which the Romanians or Czechs, for instance, have achieved to a greater extent of success without all these preparations? Professor Rapkin points out, in A Threat from Within, that many positions taken by anti-Zionists are close to those of the Israeli peace camp. For example, a neutral Karta document asserts the Zionist movement was not only a heretical departure from Judaism, it was monstrously blind to the indigenous inhabitants of the Holy Land. In the 1890s, less than 5% of the Holy Land's population was Jewish. Yet Theodor Herzl described the movement as that of a people without a land for a land without a people. This has dispossessed thousands and plunged the region into its never-ending spiral of bloodshed. No one who reads Yaakov Rapkin's thoroughly researched book will ever again believe that Zionism and Judaism are the same, or that Zionism enjoys the level of support among Jews in the United States and elsewhere in the world which it claims. And I felt that was quite important, and you can go to that, you can read that yourself, at wrmea.org, and check the archives on that one for a long and largely untold history of Jewish opposition to Zionism. And there was, I give that to you over here. I was hoping you'd go through some of these, but let's see, we have, this one's kind of interesting, I thought. If you can read that, you probably can. It's pretty
small.
The Arabs, this is from Press TV, and Gaza under fire. But the Arabs barred to run in Israel's election. The Israeli Central Elections Committee has banned Arab political parties from running in next month's parliamentary elections. Knesset spokesman Giora Portes said the election committee voted overwhelmingly in favor of the motion. He added that the body overseeing the elections accused Israel's Arab parties of incitement, supporting resistance groups, and refusing to recognize Israel's right to exist. Arab lawmakers have traveled to countries listed among Israel's staunchest enemies, including Lebanon and Syria. The ruling has been described as a racist move, and Arabs and an Arab lawmaker has even slated that the world that he would challenge the decision in Israel's Supreme Court. The decision adds to the heightened tensions between Israel's Jewish majority and Arabs' minority, reignited by Israel's bloodshed in the besieged Gaza Strip. Since the start of Israel's aggression in the enclave, at least 919 Palestinians have died, and some 4,100 others are reported wounded.
That 300 children are dead.
Yeah, and they're refusing to let the Arabs, the Arab citizens be part of the Gaza. I mean, it's not a democracy.
No.
There's no democracy there. It's a farce.
No, it's not a
it's
democracy.
It's a total farce.
It's a theocracy.
Yeah.
And then they just oppress everybody
and
else.
And the odd and the weird thing is that Zionists are actually atheists. Right?
Yeah.
They're existentialists and they're atheists.
Yeah, they don't believe in God.
So what they've done is they've done exactly what the communists did, and they made the state the God. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So Israel has become the God. Which
that's
is,
their religion.
That's their religion.
They don't believe in God, and they don't follow the commandments of God.
No, they don't. They don't, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. I mean, they're
and
just,
that's why Reformed and Orthodox Jews are very much against this whole thing.
Yeah, and
because
and
they know they're atheists. They know they aren't.
No. And for those
Jews,
and for anyone who's just joined us, we just finished reading an article. About Orthodox Jews not agreeing
and Reformed Jews.
And Reformed Jews not agreeing with Zionism, rejecting Zionism in the State of Israel. And this is interesting. There was, I'll have Lila read this one. I think she can.
Has to be one I can see the print.
Yes. Oh, this is good. It's a pretty big print.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, this, yeah, I didn't get a chance to read this last night. This is from afonews.blogspot.com. Israel military abducting as many Gaza youth as possible for information. This is by Amin Abu Warda. Hundreds of Palestinians have become the captives of Israeli forces during the current military operation in the Gaza Strip. Palestinian members of the Israeli Knesset and head of the Parliamentary Assembly, Dr. Jamal Zahalka, said Friday that the detainees were moved to a military camp northwest of the Israeli city of Beersheba. Ehud Olmert, the Israeli defense minister, established the detention camp last Saturday. When PNN first reported the story last week, there were approximately 500 Palestinians in four detention camps throughout the strip. However, they now have been moved outside. Zahalka noted that the most of the detainees are civilians, according to Israeli law. He said the detainees from the Gaza Strip were not considered prisoners of war because they are not part of the regular army. When the Israeli administration withdrew its settlers and military from inside the Gaza Strip in 2005, it enacted its own law that this meant that the occupation had come to an end. Under international law in the United Nations, the Israeli state remained the occupier. It is through the Israeli law that the status of the Palestinians taken from the Gaza Strip was established. Zahalka said that hundreds of families in Gaza who have been searching for their children do not know whether the Israeli army took them or they have been killed. He appealed to the Red Cross and Barak to disclose the names of the imprisoned Palestinians so that families can know the fate of their children. The MP pointed out that Israeli soldiers are trying to capture the largest possible number of young people in the Gaza Strip in order to obtain information from them through coercion and torture. The Israeli administration is also using extortion and people as bartering tool with the Hamas government, despite the fact that their Israelis have imposed a new blackout on the subject. There was limited footage shown of an Israeli soldier gingerly leading a row of bound Palestinians that was shot by an embedded camera crew. Those are the foreign journalists who were allowed into the Gaza Strip, but only in the areas of Israeli ground troops. Foreign journalists are still banned by the Israeli administration from being among the people of the Strip. Another Palestinian journalist, Ala Murtaya, was killed last night when Israeli forces targeted a home in the Gaza City. Information that is available indicates that there are hundreds of Palestinians who have been taken from the Gaza during the period of the attack. The majority of them are over the age of 16. Again, Zahalka reiterates today, these Palestinians are not being treated as normal prisoners of the occupation, of which there are 11,000. So, are we ready for our, we have a, our interview.
And I wanted to read some environmental news here that might be of interest. And there's a petition online that I wish people would go to check this out. This is from Friends of the Earth. They're a very large group. U.S. Voice of the World's Largest Grassroots Environmental Network with member groups in 77 countries.
Oh.
Yeah. Since 1969, Friends of Earth have fought to create a more healthy, just world. And you are receiving this message, blah, 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 blah. Okay. But what they have here is this is an alert. And call on EPA to regulate nano silver. And corporations are putting nano silver into consumer products because of its supposedly germ-killing properties. But there is evidence that nano silver harms humans and the environment. It says, join our call for the EPA to study and regulate these products as pesticides. And you can please go to, and I'll read a little bit more of it. Did you know that unregulated particles of nanosilver are making their way into our clothing, washing machines, cosmetics, and even food? The Environmental Protection Agency currently allows companies to market and sell consumer products with these risky nanosilver particles without requiring labeling to inform consumer choice. However, these particles are potentially dangerous to human bodies and the environment. They are known to be able to have unprecedented access to our bodies, are more reactive than larger particles, and may hold properties we know very little about. Because nanosilver is being used as an antimicrobial agent, it falls under the legal definition of a pesticide that the EPA must regulate. We need your help to tell the EPA that it is unacceptable for companies to be injecting these potentially harmful nanoparticles into consumer products. The EPA must regulate these particles as pesticides and remove products with nano silver from the market until further health assessment can be conducted for safety. And Friends of Earth is joining with the International Center for Technology Assessment to demand that the EPA remove nano-silver products from the market. We have filed a formal petition and have until this Friday, January 16th, to generate public comments. Will you submit such a comment? And please go to Friends of the Earth.
.com or .org?
I think it's .org. They don't have it on here for some reason. .com, I think.
Or do you think
no,
it's
.org?
It's
.org,
I think.
Yeah, it's .org.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah, and it's Friends of the Earth, okay, .org, right? And you can check that out. Just another damn thing that, you know, they're trying to get away with that could cause cancers.
Can hurt you.
But it's a pesticide, and it's a harmful little product that goes into...
I don't know what they put things. It in clothing or.
Yeah, it goes into
they don't really say.
They are making their way into our clothing, washing machines, cosmetics, and even food.
Hmm.
And they're putting it in there because it kills. It's like a bacterial killer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it allows coming to market and sell the products to the risky nanoparticles without requiring labeling. These particles are. They are known to be able to have unprecedented access to our bodies. Okay, and more reactive than particles.
I wouldn't want that in any of my products that I buy.
But it says because it's nano silver is being used as an antimicrobial agent.
Microbial.
Microbial agent. It falls under the legal definition of pesticide that the EPA must regulate.
Mm.
So that's what they're doing. They're throwing this stuff in there and, you know.
Without our permission and without adequate testing.
Which seems to be the way.
Well, they put it in first and then they say, oh, oops.
Yeah.
Causes cancer or heart attacks.
Ooh,
or and then you're just considered, if you get sick, ill, or hurt, or die, collateral damage, just like the military.
Can you use those earphones right there? And we're going to put on the interview in just a second. It's right underneath there. Right there, the earphones. I'm going to have Lila just, there's one more short article I can have her read. I was trying to cue this up.
Leo didn't do his advanced work.
Oh, I did, but it...
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Not done.
Almost done.
Not completed.
You're right.
So, the other thing is Merck is pressing for an okay to market Gardasil for males. They didn't have any success with young girls and women, so we'll try the men.
Right.
See how that works.
Didn't sell it.
Oh, this was yesterday. Israeli strike, 60 Gaza targets. And you know what? I didn't hear anything on the news today. I got home late, didn't get a real chance to listen or get on the internet to see what's happened today in Gaza. One dead, dozens injured in Gaza by suspected white phosphorus munitions. Reporting from Jerusalem and Khan Yunis, Gaza Strip, Palestinian villagers said that shelling came from the direction of the Israeli border, less than a mile away, scattering flaming objects in their midst and burning down 20 homes and the local United Nations-run school. So what that white phosphorus is doing... And why it's, I think it creates like a screen so that Abu Rish said he believed the smoke was white phosphorus gas, which is released when artillery bursts and scores of phosphorus wafers into the air that burst into the flames. We need experts to test these shells, he said, but we see the dangerous results. Captain Gary Spiegelman, an Israeli spokesman, said the army was not aware of any military activity in the area at the time. Hmm. But it killed some people, destroyed their houses and all kinds of things. Also, you might be interested to know that there have been demonstrations in Washington on December 30th and January 2nd, and last weekend on January 10th, there were mass marches in Washington, D.C. against this massacre of the Palestinians by the Israeli government and the Zionist machine. I think they'll probably have another one. There's a demonstration planned for Friday the 16th at 4 p.m. Let's see. Mission accomplished. The good news, wireless toys and communications are awesome. War is more lethal and airplanes are better able to hide from one another. The bad news, people, plants, and animals are collapsing under the toxic burdens they are carrying. Biological apocalypse is looming large. You, me, and our children are now breathing ethylene dibromate nanoparticles of aluminum, barium, and catatomic polymer fibers capable of growing and reproducing inside our bodies. This is from proliberty.com/observer. The chemtrail story has become so huge that we can't describe it in mere words. And we talk about this often on our FM show. We have a special chemtrail segment because it's important to look up and ask, where is the blue sky? So close your eyes and take a deep breath. Wait, don't take a deep breath because we can't do that anymore. Let's try again. Close your eyes, clear your mind. Try to ignore the constant ringing in your ears and your chronic pain. Now imagine the ionosphere. stratosphere and the troposphere. Imagine all the oceans, the seas and the lakes and the rivers. Imagine all the islands and continents and the mountains and the valleys and the gorges and the canyons and the deserts and the rainforests and the badlands and the scablands and the frozen Arctic and the frozen Antarctic. Now imagine the depths to which man has drilled into the earth and the heights to which man has reached into outer space. Now that you have imagined heights and depths and breadths of our world, you can grasp how big the chemtrail story has become. We are laboratory rats whose very biochemistry is being altered. Our atmosphere is now conductive, and we are all receiving its currents. The spraying has saturated our air with polymers, metallic particles, and fungi, all of which are now in our bodies as well as in the soil, plants, and animals we coexist with. We are being steadily moved away from real nature into an engineered matrix where all functions can be observed and governed. Whether you realize it or not, it has happened. Counter-propagandist Sophie Smallstrom wrote at her website aboutthesky.com. Smallstrom, who previously produced the highly acclaimed documentary 911 Mysteries, has immersed herself in the global chemtrail emergency. According to Smallstone, the chemtrail spraying is part of an integrated atmospheric weapons system. Though it seems the program is currently about weather modification, the aerosols containing nano-engineered biologics or weaponized parasites. According to those who have done the research, we are virtually all infected. Perhaps seeded would be a better word. You can get this article yourself. I think Rio is ready with our interview. Go to proliberty.com/observer/2008/1211.htm.
Or you can just go to, what is it, proliberty.com.
You can go to aboutthesky.com.
Yeah. So.
And you can read and understand about chemtrails.
Yeah, and just put up chemtrails. There's a number of, there's a New York Skyline, our Skywatch, I see New York Skywatch. I see lines. I see lines.com and many, many others. If you go to any browser, you can, or any search engine will bring up a zillion of them for you under the word chemtrail. And now we're going to go to our interview with Gail Corey Townsend. And here it is, about a half an hour.
And it's informative.
And she's a reporter, and she is the founder and writer for thecornerreport.com, and she keeps that website up all the time and keeps us up on, especially on what's happening in Palestine. Welcome to the show, Gail.
Hi, Lila. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you this evening?
I'm okay.
Yeah. Lots of conflict in Palestine. A very, very sad situation there. I read Mazen Kinsella's letter that he wrote to the Palestinian American Congress.
I wanted to refer everybody to your site as well. Whoops, thecornerreport.com. And there's a lot of discussion.
I should preface this by saying that this interview was done right about a week into the attack on Gaza.
Last I heard was
up to 365.
I heard 384 today.
Okay.
And,
I guess I'm gonna have to update that.
Update it again. And I heard 1,600 wounded.
More than 1,700 actually.
1,700 now.
The last I read, 375 dead, 1,720 injured.
Wow.
So it's a tragedy and it's a war crime.
It's absolutely a war crime. There's no question about it.
And I'm actually having a hard time, a hard time even really discussing it. And I've been posting, as you know, I've been posting just so many articles about it because there are so many writers who are sort of excellently expressing what I just am too distraught to express right now myself.
Yeah.
wanted to before I continue, I just wanted to clarify that this interview took place about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So right at the beginning of the conflict, within the first week of the conflict in Gaza. So the statistics are a little off. I mean, we're now up to over 900 dead and 377 children killed, as well as 4,100 Palestinians wounded. So I just wanted to make that clear.
One of the earliest things that came out on the 27th, on the first day of the Israeli invasion, was by John Berger, who's a the British writer and art critic, very, very distinguished and courageous man. And he sort of really came to my rescue emotionally. He wrote, "We are now spectators of the latest and perhaps penultimate chapter of the 60-year-old conflict between Israel and the Palestinian people. About the complexities of this tragic conflict, billions of words have been pronounced defending one side or the other. Today, in the face of the Israeli attacks on Gaza, the essential calculation, which was always covertly there behind this conflict, has been blatantly revealed. The death of one Israeli victim justifies the killing of 100 Palestinians. One Israeli life is worth 100 Palestinian lives. This is what the Israeli state and the world media, more or less, with marginal questioning, mindlessly repeat. And this claim, which has accompanied and justified the longest occupation of foreign territories in 20th century European history, is viscerally racist. That the Jewish people should accept this, that the world should concur, that the Palestinians should submit to it, is one of history's ironic jokes. There's no laughter anywhere. We can, however, refute it more and more vocally. Let's do so." And that was John Berger on the 27th of December. And he's a very amazing guy. And 2 years ago, he mobilized dozens and dozens of prominent artists and writers worldwide to endorse the Palestinian campaign for boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
And more can be found about that at the website www.pacbi.org. PACBI is a Palestine Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel.
Right.
It was a movement that was started two or three years ago, I guess, to institute boycott and divestment. The same way that countries did it against apartheid.
I know you're on a speakerphone. Is that correct? Are you on a speakerphone?
I am. Is it not good?
Well, I'm getting some.
We get an echo.
It almost sounds like clashing cymbals in the background. Yeah.
Oh my goodness! Let me turn off my heater too.
Oh, that might
help. How's that? Is that better?
Oh, that's much better. Yeah. You sounded like you were in a terminal.
Yeah.
or sitting next to a boiler.
Yes, it's exactly so.
Okay. So that's
one of the things that
I just wanted to mention we just read an article tonight on Kucinich calls for UN investigation into the Israeli attacks in Gaza.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, that's
yes.
From the Cleveland Leader. All right, you might want to post that on your corner report, ClevelandLeader.com, and Kucinich calls for UN investigation. He calls it.
He really spoke out on it.
Yeah, he says total violation of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, and it was a good article.
It's also a violation of American statutes. Let's not forget that these attacks are being conducted using American-made F-16s.
Oh, absolutely, and smart bombs, and American-made.
And that's a violation of the U.S. Arms Export and Control and the Foreign Assistance Act.
But I have to tell you, we've turned in, under the Bush administration, we have turned into the most aggressive, imperialistic, sadistic country
in the world.
Okay.
Really? Yeah.
I am so ashamed of what we've done. Okay, since this moron, since this demon has actually been in office is just unbelievable. And I swear, if Obama isn't any better, we've just got tremendous problems here that are going to have to be corrected by the people.
Well, don't hold your breath on Obama's doing anything different about.
No, I honestly I don't. I mean, he kept his mouth shut, okay, about this thing since it started.
Well, you have to assume that it didn't start suddenly. They prepared for this for quite a long time, and they struck before Obama took office.
Yeah, but with a clown like Rahm Emanuel as his chief of staff, it's not likely that. I mean, this guy's a dual citizen, with and a member of the Israeli defense or Israeli army.
I think it's important to point out a couple of things that the mainstream media keeps harping on. First of all, to clarify, Hamas, they keep saying Hamas refused to renew the truce. Well, the fact is, Hamas actually, they never mentioned the underlying cause of all of the conflict, which is the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories, first of all.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the occupation, stupid. You know, that is the underlying thing.
And also the Fatah, I mean, the usurpation of Fatah. I mean, suddenly the elected official, the elected government of Hamas, okay, is Hamas, not Fatah. Okay, Fatah is just a puppet group put up by the United States.
Well, Mahmoud Abbas is the elected president. However, his term ends, I think, on January 9th, but he's not going quietly into that good night.
Right.
He wants to stay on. He claims that he can stay on for another year. He certainly hasn't called for presidential elections. Hamas, there should be legislative elections in next year, in 2010. And I just wanted to say also, this business that the mainstream media keeps saying that Hamas chose to end the truce. Well, that totally ignores the fact that Israel violated the truce from the very beginning by closing off all entries and exits into Gaza, by cutting the electricity, by refusing to allow the entry of fuel and food and medicine, and by totally tightening its grip on Gaza. And then, on November 5th, Israel launched an attack that killed five resistance fighters in Gaza. And that happened just a few days before Hamas and Fatah were supposed to hold reconciliation talks in Egypt.
And that was an unprovoked attack, wasn't it?
It was totally unprovoked.
Yeah.
But what it was this is a strategy that Israel uses constantly. Whenever there's any imminent movement towards peace and reconciliation, either there's an envoy coming to talk about peace, to bring the parties together, or like I remember a few years ago, Anthony Zinni was supposed to come just before Christmas, or even Tony Blair. Not that these people are genuine agents of peace, but nonetheless, they're sent on these missions. And in this case, it was reconciliation talks between Hamas and Fatah. And any time there's any movement towards reconciliation or peace, Israel launches an attack to provoke a response, and that way it derails whatever peace movement, whatever possibility of peace there is. And that is simply because Israel, Zionist Israel, does not want peace. In order to have peace, it knows what it has to do. It has to give up the West Bank. It has to give up its settlements. It has to retreat to the 1967 borders. Hamas has offered time and time again, offered a long-term hudna, it's called, a long-term ceasefire, 20, 30, 40, 50-year ceasefire, if Israel would just obey the law, international law, and United Nations resolutions, and retreat, go back to the 1967 borders.
Well, I got an article I haven't read yet, but it was a short one. It was called, it was from the Press TV. It said, Israel, don't even speak about peace. Israel's envoy to the UN, the United Nations, says that there will be no negotiations about peace as Tel Aviv attacks Gaza and the civilians for a third day. This was yesterday. And Israel started an all-out war on the Gaza Strip as of Saturday, and they said at least 345 Palestinians have been killed and 1,550 were wounded, and that was yesterday.
Yeah.
And today it's up to, I think, 384 and 1,725 wounded.
Well, Israel has been directed by the UN many times to withdraw and stop, but they just ignore everything, and there's no muscle behind any of it.
Yeah, the president of the UN just put out another order and said demanded Israel to stop and to stop its invasion,
mm-hmm.
and Israel didn't care. All right, and the United States said, oh, they got the right to defend themselves. You know what I mean? Hey, this is just a big joke, Gail.
No, it's a remarkable accomplishment. Israel has achieved the most remarkable accomplishment in convincing the world that it is the victim of the Palestinian people that it has so brutally dispossessed and destroyed and ethnically cleansed and, committed serial genocide against. And somehow it has convinced the world that it, the fourth most powerful military in the world, that it is the victim of this occupied and oppressed people.
Amazing, isn't it?
Starving, unemployed people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
We just read an article too about them kicking out, refusing to let any journalists in Gaza
right
now. Yeah.
Fortunately, there are some already in there, and also, I don't know if you heard, but the Free Palestine boats that have been going from various places in. Well, there was another one with Cynthia McKinney. It was on it.
We read about that tonight. Yeah.
And, it was slammed by the Israeli Navy, I guess.
Yeah.
And had to go to Greece or land somewhere else.
Lebanon, yeah.
They actually slammed into this boat of nonviolent, bringing nonviolent, humanitarian aid, bringing medicine and food and stuff to Gaza, and they slammed into it.
That's sick. I mean, the Israelis are sick.
In international waters, that happened.
Uh-huh.
And for anybody to tolerate this is. Beyond absurd. I mean, it's just it's beyond absurd. I'm sorry.
But also,
I can't.
To look on another side, I can't call it a bright side because so many people are dying and so many people are suffering and it's such devastation, just devastation. However, the Israelis they fail to learn their lessons. You know, they don't learn their lessons. I mean, they thought 2 years ago they thought that. They could go into Lebanon and...
what happened to them then? Nothing. They destroyed Lebanon and nothing happened.
Well, they did the same thing. They went in and they murdered 1,000 people and they...
Destroyed
the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And what happened was Hezbollah came out victorious in the resistance and the social movement of resistance. They became heroes to the Arab world.
Sure.
I mean, I remember I was in Palestine that summer.
I remember you anyway, yeah.
And I was staying with a Christian family in Beit Zahur in Shepherd's Field, and this 76-year-old Christian woman was absolutely adored Hassan Nasrallah, thinking of him as a hero, cheering him on, watching TV,
watching the war on television,
and cheering Nasrallah on.
Mm.
He was seen as a hero throughout the Arab world, and not just Muslims.
Right. Well, look at the thing that amazed me is that they actually showed this. Okay, the thing that amazed me is the demonstrations and the support of the Arab people around the Middle East, throughout the Middle East,
against Israel. I posted a video somewhere in the gazillions of videos I've posted in the last few days of a demonstration that happened in Egypt.
Right. On
Sunday the 28th, there was this gigantic demonstration in Egypt. And, that is really something. And that's another kind of bright spot, is that all of these demonstrations in the most repressed and repressive dictatorships in the Arab world, all of our best buddies, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The American government always supports the worst dictatorships. People there have been protesting in the streets, and
Oh, they showed thousands. I saw that video. Thousands and thousands of
people are absolutely. And, you know, Palestine is the one issue that unites all these people. You know, because they see.
They see what's happening. They see, I mean, they see their fellow people getting slaughtered. I mean, it's no different.
Well, it's so unjust.
Yeah, but it's no different than people. I mean, we're talking small areas here. Really small countries. And, I mean, it's no different than if we saw Massachusetts people getting slaughtered. You know what I mean?
Right. And a huge wall being put up by the state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
To wall the people in and then not letting any food or any medical supplies.
Right.
Cut off their water and their electricity.
Starve out Connecticut, starve out one of the states, and allow, you know, it's just about as absurd as that. Okay, we can't think of that now, and you know, as Americans, but it's no different than that because you're dealing with extremely small countries, okay, and in a country that's already split by two factions. By two peoples, by the Israelis and the Palestinians. So I mean, it's no different than if you had the Palestinians and Israelis fighting over Connecticut. You know,
yeah.
What I mean, it's you're dealing about the same basic size. Am I right?
Yeah, it's tiny.
It's very small.
Gaza is smaller than Region 1.
Oh my
God. Our six-town school district is 250 square miles. Gaza is about 150 square miles, the entire region of Gaza. There's 1.5 million people living there.
Wow.
And so when Israel says, oh, we're only targeting military and Hamas buildings, this is bull. This is nonsense. It's so congested. There's no way. I mean, you know, missiles, rockets, and missiles are not. They don't discriminate between, you know, Hamas and non-Hamas people.
And not only that, they send bombs and missiles into schools.
Yeah.
Right. Schools.
They destroyed the university. They destroyed two mosques.
Yeah. I mean, they're destroying the cultural, the educational areas. There's everything unimaginable there. I mean, this is just out and out barbarism. This is out and out, you know, genocide and murder.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with a military bull. This is out and out murder.
But you know what? I mean, this is going to come around and.
I hope so, Gail. I haven't been this pissed off about anything like this since Lebanon pissed me off. That there was no question about that. And I wrote about it and I talked about it on here. And I even think we had you on shortly after.
Mm-hmm. We did
during that. But this thing is out and out. An out-and-out atrocity, without question.
It's an atrocity, it's true.
Now, I wanted to announce to the people living in the Region 1 area, okay, that on Channel 6, starting tomorrow, there will be at 7 o'clock on the Ollie Steele Show on your public access station, there will be the View from the West Bank, which is a panel discussion that we had with Gail, Mazen Kupsaya and Justine McCabe about 3 years ago now, I believe.
Yeah,
at least about 2 or 3 years ago, talking about this right before the Lebanon mess and or right after, and we did it's a 3-part show, and it'll be airing tomorrow at 7.
And what was said then is relevant. Today, as it was.
Right. And things haven't changed. And you get they discussed and showed the walls. You know, the outright insanity
that it's an atrocity. I mean, it doesn't make good common sense for American foreign policy.
No,
it's against the interests of the American people, and it's against what the American character stands for.
Right.
I mean, it has nothing to do with the way Americans believe, I don't think. Americans don't want to be like this. They don't want to have a foreign policy that destroys other people, that encourages embargoes for people to starve.
Oh, encourages terrorism.
And encourages
that's right. Encourages hatred.
This administration, since 9/11, has stirred up this incredible anti-Arab, anti-Muslim fear in this country so that you have 25 million, you know, right-wing Christian Zionists who hate Muslims and hate Arabs and think that, you know, Israel has to exist and has to have all of Palestine and beyond so that the Messiah can return and all the...
Yeah, but a bunch of wing nuts. I mean, you got absolute...
All the Jews will become Christians. I mean, it's the most anti-Semitic ideology in the world.
Yeah. Absolutely, but yet, you know, talking about this and being a Zionist, if you will, all right, what a Christians, I love these Hagees and whatnot, you know, it's being Christian Zionists, okay, when all they really want is to destroy Israel. I mean, they're praying every day for the destruction of Israel, for the destruction of the Jewish people, to bring back the Messiah. You know what I mean?
Right.
To that Christ returns, and yet, you know, it's just mind-boggling that people believe this stuff. You know what I mean? I, sorry, Gail, I took
right,
your time here, but I got a little
into believing it. Now, there's a really interesting article that was posted, I think, on the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. And it's by, it's by Mustafa Barghouti. He's a Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative, which is, I'm not quite sure what it is actually, but he's a very secular guy and a secular candidate for president and a strong advocate of nonviolent resistance to the Israeli occupation. Now, it's very interesting that Huffington Post writes these, puts in this disclaimer. These comments and views are his own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Huffington Post. Well, I noticed they never put in a disclaimer for other things, but anyway.
Well, did you hear about they got caught by stealing bloggers? Other bloggers' material.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was a big article. I saw it the other day. In fact, I was going to bring it up. I think it was last week that the Huffington Post was cited for stealing, constantly plagiarizing and stealing other people's work.
That's weird.
Yeah, and specifically bloggers, other bloggers.
But not attributing it. I mean, not.
Yeah, they don't.
Right, not contributing it. Right, putting it
under their own name.
Under Huffington. You know what I mean?
I just want to quickly review this article.
Go ahead.
This article.
Yeah.
He calls it Palestine's Guernica and the Myths of Israeli Victimhood. Now, we know that Guernica is that amazing painting by Picasso right up in the Spanish Civil War.
Right, right.
1930s. And
sang it up in the,
That's the Prada.
Well, they've got something in the UN building, actually, now. They've got something.
I think there's a couple of copies of it around.
It's probably a copy, but I know it's in Spain here. Yeah.
So he goes through these myths. One is that Israel has claimed to have ended the occupation of Gaza. Well, it removed all the settlements, but it still controls the border, the airspace, the waterways, and everything, and has imposed this comprehensive siege on Gaza. Another myth is that Israel claims that Hamas violated the ceasefire and pulled out of it unilaterally. In fact, Hamas respected the ceasefire, and except on those occasions when Israel carried out major offensives in the West Bank, and in the last 2 months, the ceasefire totally broke down when Israel killed several Palestinians, and of course, Hamas responds to that. Another is that Israel claims to be pursuing peace with, quote, peaceful Palestinians. Well, who are they? Who are the peaceful Palestinians?
Really?
I mean, the West Bank is still occupied. You know, they've killed since the Annapolis peace process a year ago.
Right.
They've killed another almost 600.
No, that was a complete
700 people.
That was another Bush.
The idea that
Bush
Israel
farce,
is acting in self-defense.
Yeah, that was another Bush farce, though. But I wanted to ask you about the Lebanon. You remember the massive oil spill in Lebanon after the war? Whatever, had you never heard another word about that after it? You never heard if it was cleaned up. You never heard what happened. I mean, it devastated their tourism, devastated their beaches, devastated everything.
I don't know what happened to that. It probably was cleaned up, but we're coming to an end, and I just want to mention one thing, this is a really ironic and kind of symbolic, it's sort of a symbol of how Israel's actions are going to come back to bite them in the behind. You know, in the past year, the past 6 months especially, they have the siege against Gaza, and they have broken everything, including the sewer systems.
Right.
And so Gaza, and the sewer from, you know, human waste and everything
yeah.
from Gaza
yeah.
is spilling into the ocean. And now this big cloud of human waste that is spilling into the ocean because of the tides and the winds and that is moving up the coast towards Israel.
Oh, right.
Moving up towards Tel Aviv and eventually will go up to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So they will be drowning in their own waste that they have created by destroying the Gaza's infrastructure. And Europe
maybe they're just God.
They don't do anything. They don't stand up. The last part of this Barghouti's essay, he says that in closing, there is another reason beyond the internal politics of Israel why the attack has been allowed to occur: the complicity and silence of the international community. Israel cannot and would not act against the will of its economic allies in Europe or its military allies in the U.S. Israel may be pulling the trigger, ending hundreds, perhaps even thousands of lives this week, but it's the apathy of the world and the inhumane tolerance of Palestinian suffering that allows this to occur. The evil only exists because the good remain silent.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
But the one heartening thing was that it was reported that there would have been demonstrations around the world. There were demonstrations in London.
I hope it keeps up. You know,
and there was a demonstration here on, Wednesday. Is that tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow
is
Wednesday.
That is tomorrow. There is a demonstration at noon, I believe, in New Haven in front of the federal building.
Oh, okay. All right. At noon?
At noon.
And in front of the federal building in New Haven.
In New Haven.
Okay.
Let me just check that. I think that's it.
Well, I wanted people to know too that I hope you can put this up in your blog. Lawyers Guild. I had this article here somewhere. Lawyers Guild has posted. You know,
they came out strongly against
the National Lawyers Guild.
Against
Israel.
Released.
Yeah, if you can go to nlg.org.
Okay.
News. Okay, nlg.org/news. It's the National Lawyers Guild press release, and National Lawyers Guild condemns illegal Israeli massacre of over 300 people. And they've got a list several pages long of the different places and the times and the places that they're having protests.
Uh-huh.
Demonstrations and protests from California to Maine, you know.
Yeah, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
So you might want to check that out. Very, very well-worded, very forceful.
I mean, I have to say that the national media usually doesn't pay attention to those kinds of demonstrations, and they have spent some time talking about them, and it was great to see that, but the one thing that I don't like is that when this is talked about by the national media, it's talked about like it's a battle of equals,
yeah.
and it just isn't.
Even though they state that they want a peace, they want Palestine to have no military, no arms. Okay,
yeah.
they want a peace the whole concept is absurd.
It's just so absurd.
And the thing that bothers me about this Egyptian issue, we're just reading tonight, that Egypt has done absolutely nothing to aid the Palestinians.
And they keep
right?
the border closed.
And the reason for that is because we're paying them $2 billion a year. That was part of the
Camp
David Accords.
Right.
You know what I mean?
After Israel, they get the most aid.
Right.
Called aid.
Right.
Yeah, they're in the pocket. You know, they're in the pocket. They're collaborators.
That's right. Yeah.
And Mahmoud Abbas is a collaborator with America and Israel, and he wants Israel to to kill off Hamas. But it's stupid, because even if they killed every single Hamas leader, Hamas is a widespread grassroots political movement.
That's right. It's an insurgency.
Terribly popular, and there are other leaders who will come up and take their place.
That's right.
Their places. And,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. They're a legitimate political party.
Mm-hmm.
They have a military wing. And, it's only America, it's only the superpowers, the big, powerful nations like America and Israel and Russia who deem groups that resist them are all terrorists, right?
Right.
They're never terrorists. Like, they don't recognize their own state-sponsored terrorism. When they reign, when they go into countries, invade countries and drop bullets, drop 1,000-pound bombs on
right.
neighborhoods. That's not terrorism. That's the worst kind of terrorism.
That's a good way to end. We're out of time, but I want to thank you, Gail, for being on. I want to refer everybody to thecornerreport.com, which is Gail's blog, if you want a real insight into what the Palestinian conflict is really all about. And check out her blog. Check that blog out.
Giving me the opportunity to speak about this.
Well, thank you for being on, and let's hope that the new year brings better times.
Right.
Also.
Oh, I wanted to tell you, I hope to have Chief Velke on next week.
Oh, great. Yeah, I saw your email.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah, good news.
Yeah, I CC'd you, yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully that might happen. I haven't heard from him yet, but hopefully that'll happen.
That's great.
So anyway, thanks, Gail, and
yep.
Happy New Year if we don't talk to you before then.
Okay.
All right. Happy
okay.
New Year.
And
okay.
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night. That was Gail Corey-Tonsing. She's the editor of thecornerreport.com.
Yeah. And we just want to thank everybody for joining us and wish everybody a very, very...
Yeah, I want to thanks for joining us tonight. I hope you got some insight into what's happening in Palestine. Of course, it's increased since then. This was just right before New Year's that we had the interview with Gail, and of course, since then, the deaths in Palestine have increased to almost 1,000 people. And the wounded is up over 4,100, and the devastation is just insane. And of course, the ground they're doing, the Israelis put together a ground offensive now, so it's going to be crazy. And we'll see what happens. It won't end until at least Obama gets in, and even if Obama gets in, it'll probably just continue to escalate. So we don't know, but. God bless the Palestinians, and hopefully they'll get through this. And thank you for everybody for joining us, and we wish you a very pleasant evening. And tomorrow night we will be doing the selected readings again from the Agni Yoga series that we've been doing for quite some time now. And and then on Friday night you can join us as well at 8 o'clock. For George Dixon, Conversation with George. We talk about the Mayan calendar in 2012 and prophecies and aliens and paranormal and everything else that goes along with the Friday night program. So please join us and have a pleasant evening. Good night.